You want to guess how many hours we've spent on this book? This, if we finish double hour today, it'll be 60 hours. I was on a, I typed this up because I may at some point want to try to publish as part of this. I was going to type up how many words we said. I count up how many words we said. But I didn't get around to it. So maybe before next time I'll do that. It'd be interesting. Because I typed it up, and I'll just do a word check on all, each week. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if I'll have time to do that. I thought it'd be interesting to know how much hot air did we...
Well, look at, if you look at a college course, even a 3 hours, look at me, 3 times a week, and you're supposed to have 2 hours for every credit hour.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be 6. That would be 10 hours a week times, what is it, 18 weeks? That's 180 weeks. That's 180 times a year. I don't even say anything.
Well, we have used a lot of words. But for me, it's been very enjoyable. Oh, good. Let's do a review. Last time we went from 379 to 384, and I'll just touch on the main points.
So we stopped on 381.
we just stopped on 391.
Yeah.
What am I thinking? Basically, we're talking about the unio corporalis. That shorthand term should make sense. 379, we talked about Sophia as a vas conjunctionis, top of 379, which is a vessel of union. And that meant that Sophia is not only this information that we're getting, but that information itself wants to join with reality. There's a dynamism within that itself to become real. That's what. Somebody asked me for an example. I gave the example of the finger. Not giving the finger, but...
I missed something.
It's quite a class. No, I was talking about a guy who was about ready to change work from really pretty much having done his duty in the trenches, so to speak, of social, industrial, community work. And was in the process of getting out of that into and freeing up time to do more creative work, and was slicing bread at a family function and just literally did not see, sliced right almost through his finger. And it came in the next week, and I talked about that image occurs generally in people's dreams when they're about to transform their creativity. Because the finger as a symbol of creativity, because dwarf in Greek and finger in Greek have the same word, dactylos. So fingers often have to do with creativity. So he wounded his creativity, which was, from the point of view of the self, what was going on. His old creative involvement in life was becoming bland. But instead of having a dream, it happened in reality. And that's what the Sophia stuff is about. When the psyche actually, put it the other way, when the physical world begins to have a symbolic significance. Which, you know, we talk about basically, just to review, a synchronicity. But we've also seen that certain diseases can have a symbolic meaning, so the flesh. And certainly, I think, where most people deal with this thing from the emotional suffering point of view, is desire. That they get into a love mess through physical desire, but in retrospect, or even in the middle of trying to sort it out, begin to see that that was a purposive, meaningful event with a very clear message about their individuation. So that's also Fiat. Also in 379, there, at the top there, it mentions that she wounds his heart with one of his eyes. I talked about the wounding of the self when it seizes. 380, she refers to herself as a crown. We had that before. That she, as meaning, is placed on reality. And here, the twist is that the man represents reality, represents the world, represents the body, represents the material world. And we don't have it here, but we had it earlier, that a reference to crowning is that a worm is crowned. And we talked about that as often the Sophia experience occurs when you feel like a worm. And it's when the ego is depotentiated that the meaning has a chance of lodging itself in your life. 382, she talks about herself as a sling of David. Again, the dangerous aspect of the anima, or this experience. 383, which was kind of a big deal, the scepter, the top, I am the scepter. The idea is there that Sophia does have rules. She has very, very strict rules. Almost more strict, I think, sometimes than Yahweh. But there are a different set of rules. Another very important point we got into, which we'll see in this Pali material, the idea of the mystic earth, second line down on 385, and the reference to the lower trinity. We talked about spirit as being the inner guiding function. We talked about Jung's feeling that the inner guiding function of the psyche manifested itself at the beginning of the Christian era in Christianity, and largely symbolized by the Holy Spirit. So that Christianity gave civilization a new direction, just like it can give an individual's life a new direction. But that spirit was personified in images connected with light, goodness, joy, exaltation. So that dimension of the spirit is light. And the image of God associated with that way of looking at the spirit is a light understanding, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, which is what we call, or what the alchemists would call, an upper trinity, because it's light. But the spirit has a light and a dark aspect, and there is just as much guidance through the spirit in dark experiences that we've talked about, body experiences, despair, lust, disease, synchronicity. I say lower there because it's material, not necessarily because it's morally bad or morally distressing. And that's the lower trinity. So Sophia is the lower trinity. Or Sophia is in the area of the lower trinity, might be a better way to put it. She is the spirit in that lower direction. I know we've gone through this several times, so if it's old stuff, I'll just skip over it. But are you aware of why Jung thought there was a upper trinity in the first part of Christendom and a lower trinity now? And this is Ion. Some of you have done, so I don't need to review that, everyone. Quick review. Just a quick view of history to put what I've said in context. This is what Jung did in Ion. Ion, remember, means long term. So he's looking at long term phases of Western history. And he takes as a starting point the near destruction of Western civilization in the Roman era. I say destruction because they were just a bunch of hedonists. And Roman history is a tale of murder and lust and violence at the political and social level. So Jung felt, had that continued, the world, or the world as we know it, would never have evolved. Something had to happen, and that something was Christianity. So because the world was in such a instinctual turmoil, the spirit, which again, remember, Jung accepts as a fundamental constituent of human nature. This is not reduced to anything else. This is simply part of us, as opposed to Freud and I think most psychology. The spirit, on a general scale, began generating the urge or the impulse or the images that represent the urge and the impulse to change human behavior away from hedonism toward self-control. And that is the psychological accomplishment of Christianity. But in order to do that, it had to exclude half of human nature, the half of human nature that was running the show to such a destructive end. So that's why all the images in Christendom are light, and why the spirit was light. And the spirit then propagates concerns of caring and justice and morality and decency and values against the instinct, because the instinct at that time was so very dangerous, sociopathic, really. So, and that is an enduring accomplishment of Christianity. The accomplishment is that it got, the spirit worked through that way to guide civilization in decency, which is a plus, but at the expense of half of human nature. So the other half of human nature got excluded. Is she okay?
Give her a cup of water.
Just a cup of water.
I hate to have somebody die during the history of Christianity. That's going to be awful.
Oh, she won't die.
I have a vivid imagination.
I thought one of the sacrifices. What we do before to propitiate the gods before we move on to our next study.
Yeah, but that's symbolic.
Wait, oh, so why did you say that half the people had to be sacrificed?
Half of human nature. Half of human nature. So nobody's going to die.
No.
I can tell you a bad joke. Actually, it actually happened. I was in a restaurant once when somebody almost choked to death on a hot dog. And the person I was with knew the Heimlich maneuver and went over to her, you know, did that, and the hot dog came flying out. This is a true story, it came flying out. So the next time we went in, and the waitress said to us, "Would you like smoking or non-smoking?" And my friend said, "Oh, you mean choking or non-choking?" But it's not funny when it's when it's happening.
I had to do it to my 4-year-old son.
Really?
You know, it was so scary watching turning blue. Knowing what to do was crazy.
And you knew what to do, huh? Yeah.
And it came out.
Yeah. Okay, so hedonistic situation. The spirit in us wants to change that. It does. It creates Christianity. Christianity works because it lifts people out of that instinct and gives a new direction, antithetical to the hedonism that was prevailing. But then at the expense of all the part of the psyche that's instinctual. Well, that phase of history has run its course, Jung feels. Again, I'm making it very simple. And all the parts of the psyche which Christianity had to exclude are now pushing back for integration. And they're not just pushing back for integration, they're also means whereby the Spirit can speak. The Spirit can speak through all human dimensions, but it had to exclude the instinctual 2,000 years ago. And because that was excluded, it is now pressing back all the harder now because it wants for totality to be reached. So that's where Sophia fits in. Sophia is the voice of that spirit now, which is no longer willing to only come to us through the light, but now wants to come to us through the dark. Yeah.
Speaking of that, I was listening to a tape on the way back, and you were talking about the difference between instinct and intuition, and that with intuition, you have a choice. With instinct, you just may act out of your unconscious. But that now we've actually, that maybe this integration, part of this integration mm-hmm. is that we have the we understand what's mm-hmm. going on, and right. we have the choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Consciousness that
absolutely.
We didn't have before.
And that to me is the very exciting point of being alive at this point. And I think it really helps you to know what the psychological task is, why Christendom as it is largely defined is inadequate, which is not to invalidate its past, but to say it's in a period of change, which has to occur, into what we don't exactly know, but certainly the new religious experience seems to be coming through the body, through all those dimensions which had to be excluded 2,000 years ago.
Question. Okay, it seems to me when you're talking about the time when Christianity came in that we are going in that direction. You know, I mean the violence,
yeah.
all the things now. So, and now this is coming in. So is this a thing that would be comparable?
Well, actually, Jung felt that the violence, the renewed hedonism, of what we're calling narcissism, you know, in psychological worlds, he sees that as all the return of what had been excluded. Mm-hmm. And it's going to return one way or the other. What we can hope to do is realize that it's got a little seed inside of it of the spirit and try to transform it. Of course, the religious right says, let's just repress it.
Mm-hmm.
But Jung feels you can't live it out, but you also can't repress it. You have to try to transform it. Because it really is the seed of a new world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the seed comes in here.
Yeah, and that's what Sophia is. That onslaught which is hitting him, hits him here as eroticism to some extent, and as, you know, the blackness, the dark sea that came over him and so on. That's, in a modern language, that's pimps, that's prostitution, that's crime, that's all the things that we read about in the paper.
Is this sort of like the pendulum swinging to the other
side? Yeah. Yeah. But the way to get back to the center is to realize the meaning of that swing to the other side, and then we'll come back to the center, because there's an inherent drive within it to come back to the center, if we understand its meaning, or if we transform it, or in terms of our text, if we get the spirit out of the experience.
On the news the other night, did you see the 23-year-old man interviewed who murdered that barbecue owner down in Hawville? Mm-hmm. Anybody see that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. He looks right at the camera, and he's 23 years old. He goes, I'm so tired. I'm so tired. I just want to die. But I can't die because my mother would be so sad, and my child would be so sad. He was an African-American man.
Uh-huh.
And I just looked, and I thought, he is carrying the weight of projection.
Mm-hmm.
So deeply in him. I mean, I just burst into tears. He's looking right at the camera, and he just puts his head on the table, and he just starts to sob. Mm-hmm. And he just kept saying, I'm so tired, I'm so tired. And it was like an archetypal moment
mm-hmm.
for me. This black shadow man mm-hmm. carrying.
He's carrying all that stuff.
That's energy mm-hmm. for us, and he is worn out. He's mm-hmm. 23 years old. Oh, it was a powerful moment. So sad.
Yep. Okay, thank you. 385, the other point was the second, or the quote about halfway down the page from Aurora, they shall eat and shall be filled. We talked about the multiplicatio, which is synchronicity. That what the Sophia experience is, it's an onslaught of those instincts again. But now with higher consciousness, some of us are hopefully able to respond to the challenge to pick the spirit out of that. And when we do, that spirit will be the new direction of our own personal life, perhaps the life of our time, and that will have a positive effect on the environment to the point of bearing on synchronistic events. 388, we begin to see now what's going to occupy the rest of the book, which is a return to pagan pleasure. O beloved, ye supremely beloved, etc. Joy breaks in now. And so the joy of that pagan time returns, but it returns in a different level because it returns to a person who's conscious and a person who can work with it and see the spirit in it. Now, this has not happened in the figure of the person who's having the vision, but it shows the unconscious is trying to orchestrate this sort of change from within itself. Yeah.
I don't know if this I would fit or not, but, you know, when, I'm pagan, and when we really started studying about it, we found out that it's the fastest growing religion in the world. And even though it's quite varied, when I started into this in 85, there were not a lot of books. Now, there are books everywhere, in mainstream bookstores, big areas that have all kinds of books on this kind of thing. And I just, is this also kind of a way that they're doing it?
To me, it means that there's a feeling that nature is the carrier of the spirit, mm-hmm. which is what we're saying in different words. Mm-hmm. Somebody, I think Carol asked me, how do you see Sophia in dreams? And I just wanted to remind you, we had a couple of, I just gave you one example of that woman in the jewel. But remember, we had a couple of themes, a starlight, two circles, dual mandalas, would be a couple of them.
So starlight, what did you say?
Dual mandalas.
Oh, dual mandalas, right, from a number and time.
But remember, those can sneak into a dream in a way you don't even recognize. Mm-hmm. And I told you the dream of the two planets. A woman going from one on a spaceship, and she flew up to another planet, and she met somebody up there who told her a story that was written before time, or something like that.
Also talked about labyrinths. A labyrinth was going from one labyrinth to another. There was like a...
Was it up there?
I can't... No, this was another dream.
Oh, another dream. I forget that one. But there are any number. I just wanted to enlarge my response a little bit. I don't know if I could pin down one specific theme, but there are several.
Were webs part of that? Had you mentioned? Like spider webs?
Yes, we had that dream of the spider web. Right. Right.
Just animals in general. I mean, bears and snakes.
If they're guides, where they are guiding, absolutely. Yeah. Now, I think the only little difference that I've tried to make is that this material comes when people are in a dark phase of their life. So, that's putting some of an artificial label on it. a bear could come to you when you are having a good part of your life and guide you, or it could come to you when you're having a tough part of your life. That's the main images. So we left off at 391. The point, just to back up real quick, 390, we no, 388. Sophia begins to be addressed directly, "Oh beloved," and so on. So that the ego now is establishing, or the pattern is showing how the ego can establish a reciprocal relationship to the source of this experience. And I say that because when that happens, then joy follows. "Come, my beloved," on 391, "let's go into thy field," etc. "391, let us therefore," the second quote, "let us therefore enjoy them and use the good things speedily as in youth," blah, blah, blah. What I want you to focus on is the reference to the flowers, to the lilies, to the roses, which is an image of luxuriance, which she says is indicative of the pagan feeling for nature. Second line up from the bottom of 391. So now, all along we've had these images of distress and struggle, and now we're getting springtime. And that she continues discussing that from several points of view. Let's just look at 394, where she says, "In aurora, the feeling of ecstasy," about halfway down the page, "breaks through more and more strongly. And sweeps away all didactic and rational aspects." So just a change in tone, which would represent the fertility of that experience. The other detail she mentions on 395 is another angle on the flowers, as having to do with relationship. Flowers would represent the soul delicacy that exists in a mutually respectful relationship, such as is characterized by Eros. So you could say, here we've got another image of what I mentioned earlier, that fair play is one of the fruits of Sophia. So that when you are living your own life, you are not interested in power, but in friendship. And that, on the human side, is one of the manifestations of Sophia. More joy, bottom of 395, "live in the union of love with joy and merriment." that the quote there, the second line in the quote at the bottom of 395. It's almost hard to think it's the same guy writing this. Now, so we've zoomed along. I want to just dwell a little bit on this next image. Behold how good, still on that same passage, and pleasant it is for two to dwell together in unity. Let us make, therefore, three tabernacles. That's the first thing. Well, that's actually the second thing we'll be looking at. One for thee, a second for me, and a third for our sons. For a threefold cord is not easily broken. So it's the threefold cord in three tabernacles. Let's go to 396. Four lines down. From the biblical original, it is difficult to see how the saying about the threefold cord joins up with the praise of marriage of two lying together. We have to suppose a third unifying power which acts as a link between the two. That's what I want to look at, is that image of three after the two presupposes that there's a third, which would be Sophia, that links, that the two are linked in the third. And she says directly in the second paragraph on 396, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down, the rope thus represents a continuity of experience or meaning through which consciousness is connected with its substrate, collective unconscious.
And she is one of those things that's linked.
Well, I was going to ask you what that means.
She's not only the thing that is linked together, but the medium through which it's linked.
Yes, and she is connected, or she's part of the connection with the substrate. What is the substrate? Yeah, how would you put, in your own words, that we are involved in discovering a third which is related to the substrate, which is the collective unconscious?
Say that again.
How would we... how would we...
be the third light.
How is the...
Well, it's coming the new way out of the two things. Like, it's not the light of the moon any longer, but it's the thing that comes out of the union, that new thing.
Right. Now, how is that a leakage to a substrate?
I don't know what a substrate is.
I know. That's really the question, I guess. What is a substrate?
Sounds like what they described when they talk about the Unus Mundus, it's the underlying reality that makes the unity of the conscious and unconscious possible.
I understood it to mean your underlying pattern. That that Sophia is a linkage back to your underlying pattern, to your, as we have said several times, your a priori identity.
Is that to the illuminated part of us? Is that what you're saying? Or?
Well, to be illuminated would be to know what that relationship to the substrate is about.
Okay, but she would be the light too.
Or to know her.
Okay.
Right. She is that link. And so she is that third between two people. which would allow a relationship to flourish.
And was just unique to that couple, that coupling, that type of coupling, because isn't that what that substrate means then?
I think it's to a large extent unique, but I think there's also, remember we were talking earlier about themes in history. It is also somehow linked to the demands of the historical time. So it's unique and not unique at the same time.
Are you talking about relationships between two people or
interrelationships? Well, both.
Okay.
Yeah. I think to make it simple, you could just think of this as Jung's view of a happy marriage. Well, happy is the wrong word. Of a meaningful marriage. That there is an awareness of a greater pattern of your life, of your partner's life, and just as you have learned that the realization of yourself is a sacrifice to your pattern, you would support your partner in realizing how his or her life is a sacrifice to his or her pattern, so that you're each supporting each other in the larger effort of getting past the petty ego. And conversely, just like you have learned sacrifice to your own selfhood, it feels less of a burden when you're involved in helping the partner make a sacrifice to their selfhood. Because their journey takes energy from you too. And then, until you're comfortable realizing that authenticity is based on the sacrifice, those demands just feel like a burden.
My husband on the phone. We just had this conversation this morning. I gotta see if I can get this down. I'll just speak with you at what you were trying to say initially.
Did
you yeah, I'm gonna go back and listen to
authenticity is a sacrifice.
Yeah.
Just to give this a very practical twist, this is how I respond to people who say, well, going to Jung, you know, how did Emma Jung put up with that? And wasn't he, just looking out for himself? But I think she knew that he was tapped to articulate something. And for him to articulate that was a terrible struggle and sacrifice on his behalf. And she felt the importance of what was in the collective unconscious that he was articulating. And so it didn't bother her to support him, because she felt for that deeper message that he was pretty good at articulating. So it wasn't that she was giving to him, it was that she was giving to this deeper thing that he was really crucified almost to express. And that to me is what love is. It's when you see the pattern beneath the person and how what that pattern is asking of them is often no fun. And it's a terrible ordeal, which hopefully in the long run is going to be creative and lead to a longer term happiness. But at the moment, the selfhood is a struggle. And so if all people are involved in that struggle, one can help oneself hear it. One can help the other person and support the other person's wrestling with that, which takes away from the immediate enjoyment of the ego's pleasure principle, pride principle, social standing principle, because it's a sacrifice to serve this level of reality. And look what it cost Jung.
And that's why I said, well, I would think that it did burden her. I mean,
it did.
It did burden her. You were saying that's why it didn't burden her, but I think it did burden her.
Yes.
But she came to accept that she was willing to make that sacrifice because of this.
Yeah, not for him, but for what was going on through him. which she knew was important. That's where she was very mature. It must have been enormously mature. And they were both sacrificing for it, basically. He paid it one way. He may have had more sex, to be crude about it. But he paid a terrible price in terms of being shamed by the community. And that's what he had to put up with. And she had to pay for it in lonely nights. But both knowing there's this thing that we're working on, which is bigger than both of us.
And I would suspect that they came to that. I mean, that it didn't start out that
way. Oh, through a huge war.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That it wasn't just like, oh, well, we're doing something grand here.
Oh, I'm sure there were late nights of screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting this thing straight.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Coming to that place where they could say, okay, that's why we...
That's why we're together. And that's why we are together.
Why we're together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, to me, that's the transpersonal dimension of a love relationship and what I think she's getting at here by the third. But you see, it takes maturity. It takes somebody who knows life is just more about me, me, me. And since we live in a me, me, me time, people won't even sacrifice to their own selfhood, much less the selfhood of their partner.
This issue of Spring Journal is devoted to Mary Woodman, has it been? And Ron Woodman writes an article about her and addresses this, and it's so beautifully done. This whole idea of their marriage.
Yeah, I suspect there it's the opposite. She was Carl and he was Emma.
Both they are. He's kind of a crusty guy himself, and he caused her some real angst. But I remember her telling me that when the day comes and you look at your husband with complete indifference, then you probably need to leave. Because up until that, all that tension is just your soul at work.
Yeah, it's the different varieties of establishing a relationship with this transcendent thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sandy.
Would there have been more than one way to fulfill this pattern? Could he have just been friends with the other woman? Did he have to be?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I like to be nice about it and say no, but I think he had to, yeah. I think often we have to. It's nasty. Fated union that lasts beyond death, 397. 1, 2, 3, 4 down. That's what the third leads to.
Okay.
See where I am there? Oh, 397.
Gotcha.
1, 2, 4 lines down. She's talking about the rope in another context, but I think I'm trying to shorten it here for our purposes. It applies here. Fated union that lasts beyond death. That's what you get. 397, yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So that you both stumble on something bigger than you, trying to work through you. Both are sacrificing their own ego for this process and supporting the other person's sacrifice. And what that leads to is a connection that's lasts longer than life.
But this is red.
Yes.
What'd she say?
It's rare. It's very rare. It's very painful.
Yes.
That's a good bumper sticker. Authenticity is a sacrifice. I could check that out.
It really, that's really one of Jung's basic premises.
And that's the part from sacred.
Right.
The sacred sacrifice.
Sacred sacrifice.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of people going around doing the wrong kind of sacrificing.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah, and that's within that context.
Codependence is
exactly,
a great
yeah.
phony sacrifice.
Sacrifice.
Self-serving. Going back to the Latin means think holy.
Means?
Make holy.
Make holy.
Offering.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's boy, it's interesting to watch this in dreams. You, the animals often ask for it. Where when it's a phony sacrifice, a codependent sacrifice, the ego is up on a cross, or the ego is, the dreamer is cut and bleeding and boo-hoo-hoo, and it's just masochism. But when it's a genuine sacrifice, you can see there is in the dreams a reversal of what naturally happens. A fox will come up and say, I want you to do this and this. Or a deer will come up and say something. It's like the natural course of events in dreams shifts. And then you know you're on the real thing. Because then that sacrifice, even though it might feel like it's against your vitality, really isn't against the instincts. The instincts are asking for them. When the codependent sacrifice is just, you don't have the guts to go out and get what you want, so you go on helping other people and playing the martyr, to be vicious about it. But the real sacrifice is something else. And it's not that frequent, it's true. Most of the time we are helping people get stronger in their egos. But there are cases where it shifts.
Can I just say, when you're asked by an animal, and at that moment...
Well, then you know it's real.
You know it's real.
Yeah.
And the sacrifice...
It's in tune with the instincts.
So the vitality may be going toward that, but it's purposeful.
Well, you may...
You're not being drained.
No, at the moment you may feel like you're losing energy.
Okay.
You may feel like you're losing something of enjoyment or happiness, but you're not. It's a short-term loss, and there's a long-term gain when the animals are behind it. Again, that's a bit of Jung, and it's implied here that the instinct and spirit are two separate things. The instinct wants the transformation.
The spirit doesn't want the transformation?
Well, the spirit does, but often at the expense of the instinct.
Oh, okay.
But there is a genuine transformation, which is not the spirit repressing the instinct. That's what happened at the birth of Christianity. Spirit repressed instinct. It had to, or instinct would have killed civilization. But now we're coming back to a new experience of spirit, conceived just in the way we conceived of the spirit 2,000 years ago. That is a genuine guidance from an intelligence apart from mine. But now it is no longer working against the instinct, but with the instinct. And that is the huge difference. That's why Jung is both very critical of Christianity and very supportive of Christianity, both. Because that fundamental image of being tied to the cross remains. Because that tied to the cross is the sacrifice. It's just conceived of differently now. And I think Jung is one of the first to point that out. I mentioned two other people who I thought were very similar, Teilhard and Bonhoeffer. But most of what you get in theology is just spirit without instinct.
Teilhard and
Bonhoeffer.
Oh.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Okay, let's see. So I need to back up here a second. 397. Second paragraph. The three tabernacles are an allusion to the transfiguration of Christ. Let us make here three tabernacles, one for thee, one for Moses, and one for Elias. This again stresses the death aspect and the parallel of the lapis with the risen Christ. So it's just bringing in the image of Christ by way of association to this process that we are talking about. That's the point of that. The same language is used for this rebirth as Christ's rebirth. Which I mentioned to you to get over to 398. The first sentence in the third paragraph. By his allusion to the transfiguration, the author plainly tells us that he feels identical with the bridegroom. So it's just showing us the nearness of the self. Before we take a break, I would like to tell you that the board of directors at the Institute met and decided everyone gets an A. And everyone gets a diploma. I thought you might enjoy it.
We all get an F?
An A!
Oh,
an A!
After all this, Larry. Oh, okay. We got an F, it's been fantastic.
There you go. All right.
Well, that's not a stretch.
That's wonderful. Thank you.